This is On Target St. John's. A look at politics, crime, education. What's happening here with the people who know? The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station. Now, your On Target St. John's host, Linda Swain.
Good afternoon, everyone, and what a beautiful, crisp, cool fall day. A real fall day for a change, not like a late summer fall day, if you know what I'm saying. To feel that nip in the air makes you think about the winter ahead. I don't know about you, it makes me a little bit down, but anyway, that's it. That's it. The change of the seasons is all good. Well, are corporations paying their fair share of taxes? The issue of taxation, of course, has long ruffled feathers. No one wants to pay more taxes, yet they are a mainstream of revenue to deliver needed public services by governments, whether they be municipal, provincial, or federal. The topic, of course, drew some added attention last week when Terry Hussey, a local business owner, penned an opinion piece for the CBC asserting that corporations are not paying enough. Here to talk more about that and about the state of the province's economy is the CEO of Vigilant Management, Terry Hussey. Hi, Terry.
Hi, how are you?
Great. So why do you say corporations are not paying their fair share of taxes? You're a business owner.
I am a small business owner, and I think that's part of the key distinction in making the analysis that I did about the state of corporate taxation in Newfoundland and Labrador and across Canada and other countries around the world. It's kind of a systemic problem, and it seems to be worse the larger you get as a company. You know, there are a lot of large companies who do business in Newfoundland and Labrador but pay almost no corporate tax in our province, either because they're not headquartered here or there's various tax regulations and laws that they take advantage of to enable them to either minimize profits or just declare them somewhere else, a more tax favorable jurisdiction. That results in no direct corporate taxation revenue for our province, which is a major problem.
So it's a bit of a shell game?
Unfortunately, yes, that seems to be what it is. And it's one of those things that, you know, these companies are, I'm talking enormous companies, you know, like companies that are hundreds of millions, billions of dollars, who do business all over the world. They may have a headquarters in Panama, I don't know. But they're not paying a lot of taxation to Newfoundland and Labrador. So the piece that I wrote, I kind of started digging into how much money does the government, our government, actually receive from corporate taxation. And it's kind of embarrassingly small. You know, it's $323 million, which of course sounds like a lot of money, but it doesn't seem like that much when you realize that people actually pay, you know, just about $1.3 billion in personal taxes. So we as people, individuals making money, pay almost four times what companies in our province pay. And that, to me, seems a little wrong when, you keep peeling the numbers back and they're responsible for around $24 billion worth of economic activity. The number just seems too small to me, like for what we're doing in our society. And the context that I drew it with was, you know, families in Newfoundland and Labrador, regular people, don't seem to be doing better now. It really seems like we've been struggling really ever since the cod fishery collapsed in the 90s. We've been on this cycle. But more and more people are leaving, and there's just this tacit sense of hopelessness around here that doesn't seem to be getting better. And I believe that this is one of the causes of that, in that there are companies that continue to get richer and do better and make more money for their shareholders, but it doesn't really seem like regular people, and especially regular people in Newfoundland and Labrador, are reaping the rewards.
Is there a political will to set this straight?
No, there isn't. There's no political will to fix something this complicated, certainly not in Newfoundland and Labrador, which in many cases are, you know, sometimes people give our provincial politicians a lot of trouble for not doing enough. But the sad reality is that a politician in Newfoundland and Labrador is very much adrift on the sea of a global economy and beholden to forces that they have almost no control over. So I will give them that right away, and that they're limited in what they can do. But to fix something of this magnitude would require, at a minimum, across Canada coordination piece from the federal level on down to all of the provinces to try and sort of draw a line in the sand and say, if you want to do business in Canada, we're going to insist upon you know, you fairly paying taxes. But that alone isn't enough, because then they'll just dodge it by moving their operations to another country. Really, what would fix this problem is almost a coalition of like-minded countries and societies who share a value and a sense that businesses need to do more, especially the biggest businesses need to do more to support the societies from which they get their wealth by paying more taxation. And that's something that, you know, you could see it. You could see it happening, but I don't think it's going to start in Newfoundland and Labrador. I think it'll be something that we follow on. I mean, they can do things with various agreements they sign with companies. The thing that always gets me in Newfoundland and Labrador is that we're always jumping up and down celebrating how many jobs the company is going to bring here. And then with the oil and gas companies, we did get some royalties, but it really seems like we just take the scraps. Like, oh, there's going to be 6,000 person hours of employment. And that's always been a pet peeve of mine. We talk about hours of employment, but that's really the bare minimum that a company should be giving to a society, is the wages that they pay to the people who work there. What about the wealth and the profits that they extract from that society? Why aren't any of those being paid back? Or if they are, why are we accepting such a small amount of it?
So is that what it's at play here? Is it about the complexities involved, with where the company is based and all of that kind of thing? Or is it more to do with the trade-off, that we are so desperate for the jobs and the economic spin-offs from those jobs that will, you know, make this area more, a better place to do business, as the saying goes?
Well, all of it, I mean, it's one of those things where these issues are so complicated sometimes, and people say, okay, well, you can't look at this in a vacuum. And you're right, you can't, because Newfoundland and Labrador has suffered from, you know, almost a historical willingness to be short-sighted, because our elected officials have increasingly taken a short-sighted view of what is necessary to get themselves reelected. So they don't look to 20 years from now. They're looking, how will this look in the next 2 years? And if I can report, hey, we got 200 jobs for this district, that could keep a seat safe. And that's the calculus that's constantly happening in the backs of the minds of elected officials. And it's just the reality of their situation. And then when you factor into, on top of that, that in Newfoundland and Labrador, we still allow corporate and union donations, all of these people now have another added complexity, which is the companies who they're negotiating with may also be donating to their campaigns, and yet they're supposed to advocate for the best interests of Newfoundland and Labrador and take a hard line against someone who might also have donated money to their party. And it just gets messy really quickly. And so, you know, our politicians have traditionally have operated from what I'd call a weak negotiating position, and they've never really shown a willingness to walk away from something, except for, I mean, for a period there when Danny Williams was at the peak of his popularity, you know, and he had 80% support in the polls. It really did seem like he was willing sort of to tell some oil companies to, you know, shag off, so to speak. And it seemed like it did okay. But even then, we're a small player in a massive global economy. And I don't know whether we had the expertise or the know-how to really be able to negotiate deals perhaps as well as we could have, if we'd had other partners in on it, let's say from the federal government on down. It's just tough. We're a small place. We have a limited pool of talent, and trying to operate at that level can be tough.
I want to explore, you know, ways to address that inequity coming up right after the break. My guest today on Target St. John's is Terry Huzzy. He's the CEO of Vigilant Management Systems. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
We're back. My guest today is the CEO of Vigilant Management, Terry Huzzy, and we're talking about an opinion piece that he penned a week or so ago about corporations and not paying their fair share of taxes. Terry Huzzy, my question to you is, who shoulders the greatest tax burden?
In the business world or across all of it? I mean, honestly, in Newfoundland and Labrador, I think it's the smallest businesses who end up paying the most, because they don't have the means to hide or minimize their profits. You know, a small company like mine will just declare our profits fairly at the end of the year, meager though they might be, and we pay our percentage on those. The largest companies, if they even make profit here, I mean, they do, you know, I'm talking like your huge grocery chains, international companies, and not to mention the online companies like Amazon, who make money doing business in Newfoundland and Labrador, but they pay nothing in tax here. They They only give the retail, the HST, to the federal government, and that's that. Really, it's the small and medium-sized businesses around here that are locally owned who end up shouldering the burden of this. And so the small amount of corporate taxation that is getting paid here tends to be paid by these companies who can afford to pay it the least, and they also be the, they're also the ones that support the local economy the most. And that's part of why I wrote the piece, which is to try and draw some attention to the fact that we need to do something to get these larger, publicly traded or not, companies to pay their fair share to a society. I mean, the thing that really gets me is if in Canada since March during the COVID outbreak, the richest people in Canada have increased their net worth by $47 billion, while so many people have eaten into their savings and been unemployed and struggling to try and make ends meet, something's wrong, right? The system is not working. Because, first of all, no person needs that much wealth. Like, Galen Weston does not need that much money. He doesn't. He could afford to give the Dominion workers or Loblaws workers across Canada a $2 an hour pay bump, but his shareholders would be upset, and thus that would threaten his standing and the company's health. That's a problem. Why do we as a society accept the fact that the shareholders of a large corporation are more important than the tens of thousands of people who work 40 hours a week and can't pay their rent, can't eat food, they're you know, they are essentially below the poverty line, even though they're working full time? We shouldn't be okay with that. And it shouldn't be acceptable in a society for people to say, oh, they should just work harder. Well, that's just ridiculous. I mean, these people work harder than anybody in society, and yet they're stuck on a treadmill of poverty that you just can't bust out of. And it's all based on circumstances as to what family you're born into. You shouldn't have some divine right to wealth just because you were born into a better circumstance. If anything, you should be more aware of the fact that you were granted this privilege by how or what family you were born into, and be more sensitive to trying to help others. So we accept this as a society. We turn our nose up to say, oh, well, that's not my problem. But it is our problem, because if we're all slowly slipping down the ladder of wealth and prosperity because the rich are taking more and more and we're getting less and less, you know, that's we've seen this in the pandemic. We saw the people who were most vulnerable suffering the worst, and yet we talked about it. Oh, well, what can we do? We counted on the federal government to get us by, but this isn't going to go away. These people are still vulnerable. They're still suffering. And in Newfoundland and Labrador, I feel as though we have a particularly good lens on this, because we all know people who are suffering, who are struggling to make ends meet economically, who have left the province. We've gone through cycles of this. So we need to come up with some way as a people to recognize that this is a core problem in our society and start talking about solutions. And we can't get to a solution until we admit that there's a problem. And that's kind of what I'm trying to do with the piece.
So how do we address this inequity? You already mentioned that Newfoundland and Labrador often finds itself in a position of negotiating from a position of weakness, with the trade-off jobs versus taxes. So how do you address that? Do you need to get the federal government on side, because larger corporations would probably take it a little more seriously if all provinces right across the country, you know, had sort of similar taxation policies?
Yes, I think that's a key thing. I think there needs to be a shared conversation amongst our elected officials, both federally and provincially, even municipally. I mean, some of the larger municipalities in the country have enormous economic platforms from which to discuss things that they can do. But they have to talk about it as an issue. I mean, one example is in the last 10 years, mental health has become an important issue in Canada, in Newfoundland and Labrador. And it's been something that's been driven by, you know, awareness campaigns, non-governmental organizations, not-for-profits, trying to push this, society as a whole, recognizing it as a problem and raising it to the forefront of an issue that needs to be discussed. And we have to normalize it. We need to discuss it. We need to find ways to help people, you know, achieve better mental health and deal with mental health struggles. So we've done that. This is a similar issue. And I would actually say that this is tied directly into mental health issues, because economic suffering and people having a hard time financially, there's a direct correlation between that and mental health struggles. And if you think about Newfoundland and Labrador, all of our issues with health, all of our issues with alcoholism, substance abuse, gambling addiction, underemployment, you know, struggles financially, all of this ties together to create this compact, complex web of a society that is struggling. And a key contributor to it, I think, is the fact that there's not enough wealth being earned by the people who are working in these large companies who aren't being able to share in the wealth, because our society has basically allowed it to get to a point where that wealth is just being extracted from a society by these large, complex organizations, and there's nothing there to share with the people who are in it. So in Newfoundland and Labrador, for example, what can we do? Well, I think that explaining to elected officials that, you know, wealth and inequality is an important issue is step one. And getting these elected officials to talk about this openly and to debate it as our elected leaders, and to raise it at the federal level and say, guys, this is a problem. How can we deal with this as a country? Because, you know, Newfoundland and Labrador, we're one of the smallest parts of the country, but we think this is a problem. It impacts us a lot. You know, maybe reach out to other provinces who we know this impacts the same as us, and start there and go outwards from there, because this is a terrible problem. And it's something that's contributing to all kinds of problems in our society in terms of mental health, suffering, people just living just hard lives. And we as an individual, you or I, right, as an individual person, might feel there's nothing I can do. But step one is acknowledging that it's a problem and getting people to say, you know what, this is something I want to see discussed. I'm not expecting somebody at Tim Hortons, you know, talking around a coffee table with their friends to fix this or to come up with a solution. But if they at least say, you know what, this, something's got to change. The status quo can't continue. That's how this begins. You know, you have to move the needle a little bit before you can build up the groundswell of support necessary to actually encourage politicians to pass laws. But they're not going to do it unless they see the demand from their electorate.
Are there other countries that are, you know, handling this in a more equitable way?
I mean, you could see it in other countries. You know, the Scandinavian countries get a lot of credit for their approach to personal taxation. I'm not sure how they do it with respect to corporate taxation, because everybody's kind of subject to the same forces of globalization, whereby, okay, fine, let's say America cracks down on this and starts taxing companies a little more. I mean, they can't even get the tax out of Facebook and Apple, which are based in America. You know, Apple, I think, has $100 or $200 billion offshored, which means they basically got it in bank accounts in a jurisdiction that doesn't tax corporately. And the government of America, the American government, are in constant negotiations with Apple to figure out a way for that money to be moved into an American account to allow Apple to spend the money, and to come up with some agreement for that, because they can't allow the precedent to be set. You know, Apple found a way to get the money out, but they can't quite spend it. So there are no jurisdictions that can just fix this, because with the global economy and how the internet works, people, they'll just move their operations somewhere else. And that kind of puts us on a trajectory, which we see happening now, where certain corporations actually have more power than governments in some ways, certainly financial power. They don't have the same kind of societal or military power of a country, but, you know, it puts us on a trajectory where if companies keep getting richer and richer and governments keep getting poorer and poorer, well, at some point the governments won't be able to do anything to a company. And if you look at a country like America, where campaign finance is completely just a wild west, their entire political system is based on corporate interests. Everything is about corporate interests. It's all to the profit of some corporation or some wealthy individual in the back of the scenes, kind of telling the politicians what they're allowed to say. It's just a big scripted theater. So that's kind of the cautionary tale of what happens when you let this go too far. So the solution is not easy. Even if Canada were to do it, as what you said, and I think that's the right approach. If Canada was to say, okay, we're going to do this, we're going to make it so you have to declare your profits fairly in Canada and pay it to the jurisdiction where you earn it. You got to open your books to us and so on and so forth. You might see companies that decide to just shut down their operations. So as an example, you know, in the current Dominion labor dispute, I believe, this is just an opinion, I think that there's a very real chance that you might see Loblaws or Dominion threaten to simply shut down in Newfoundland and Labrador and move out of here, rather than yield to the demands of the workers, which would cause, you know, a rippling effect across all their stores across Canada, where they'd have people demanding the same wages that the union negotiated in Newfoundland and Labrador, which would cost them hundreds of millions of dollars. They may choose to do that And if they do choose to do that, you know, the government of Newfoundland and Labrador and the government of Canada has a choice to make. Do they allow this to happen? Which is a pretty clear signal to any large corporation that if somebody does something that you don't like in a labor relations perspective, you can just shut down and leave and we won't punish you for it. And that's simply saying to a company, you can operate in our society, make as much money as you want. And if something happens that you don't like, it's okay for you to leave. We're okay with that. You really are kind of sending a signal both to workers and to companies that you're going to get your way either way.
So that's, we've already seen that in this province, haven't we, with the old, not Chester Daw, but Rona?
Yeah, 100%. Exactly the same thing. And if I go back further than that, I seem to remember there being some controversy in the 80s over the Coke bottler shutting down. You know, and Newfoundlanders and Labradorians were very anti-Coke products for a long time, for example. But that's a problem. And so, like, let's say that that happens. So now Newfoundland and Labrador is a small province. But if that is allowed to happen, for example, then every other small province in Canada needs to stick their head up and say, wait a minute. If that can happen there, that can happen here. You know, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, the Atlantic provinces, the Yukon, Northwest Territories, all these places are going to say, well, what do we do now? I mean, I think the same thing happened with Walmart in Quebec. You know, there was a store that tried to unionize and they just left Quebec. They said, we don't need your money. So there's two sides to this, right? Maybe you draw a line in the sand and you say, if you're not going to operate under these regulations, you can leave. Well, then what happens? And, you know, the free market theory would state that somebody would step in to replace it and find a way to make a profitable venture. I would rather see local and regional providers owned in Canada provide the services that some of these multinationals do, because at least then the money stays here. And that's one of the key things here. When you go to a restaurant in St. John's or Gander or Cornerbrook that is locally owned, and, you know, you spend $50 on a meal, okay, you're supporting local jobs. They bought their supplies probably from a local supplier, so that supports local jobs. But let's say that that restaurant at the end of the year makes a couple hundred thousand dollars in profit. Well, they take that money and maybe they put some of it into their restaurant and improve it, you know, do a renovation. So that money gets spent locally. Or let's say that the owner over the course of 20 years builds up, you know, a fortune of $5 million. Okay, well, now that's a person who's a wealthy person in our province. Maybe they take that money and they invest it in other businesses here locally, which also supports the economy and you start to get this runaway kind of momentum of economic benefit because all of the money is just circulating here in our own economy. That's really, really powerful. The really powerful stuff is you get a locally owned company that gets money from away. Let's say they're online. They're like a Verafin. They're online and they're doing business with banks all around the world. That's money getting transferred to a company that's owned in Newfoundland and Labrador. So it's supporting locally owned local jobs, but then it's also supporting local owners who amass wealth, who take that wealth and invest it in other local businesses. And then you're off to the races. This is like Jerry Pond in New Brunswick, who, you know, achieved all this wealth and then invested it all into the local technology sector. And now they've got a thriving industry, partially because locally owned people achieved wealth and then invested in that local economy, and off it went. We have to break the cycle of essentially just giving money away that leaves the province. And it's one of those things that's so difficult. How do you make a change as an individual? Well, maybe you buy a book from Chapters instead of ideally, you buy it from a local bookstore. But if you can't find it at a local bookstore, you go to your local Chapters store and you buy it there instead of buying it from Amazon. And even then, the Chapters money is leaving the province. So that's not a really great example, but at least it's Canadian-owned. You know what I mean? At least that money get into our society in some way, shape, or form, because we've all seen the power of the federal government in the last 7 or 8 months.
And employing local people.
Right. But, I mean, to me, the employing of local people is, that's your lowest common denominator, right? You go to Walmart, they employ local people. But that's all that they do. None of that money stays here beyond that. So if you're choosing between buying your groceries at Walmart or buying your groceries at Coleman's, buying the groceries at Coleman's will have a greater economic benefit for our society because the money stays in our society, including the profits. So consumers can make choices to help this, but at the same time, consumers aren't going to spend twice as much to get, a bottle of cleaning fluid or a pair of shoes. You know, we're driven by the same things where people are struggling to make ends meet. They don't have as much money, so they need to buy a pair of shoes for their kids. Are they going to spend $10 at Walmart or $25 at the local vendor? And it's difficult to ask them to make that choice.
And we have to pay the bills now. We're overdue for a break. But when we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit about the changing retail landscape. So we'll switch gears just a little bit coming up right after this. My guest today on Target St. John's, Terry Huzzy. He's the CEO of Vigilant Management. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
My guest today on Target St. John's is Terry Huzzy. He's the CEO of Vigilant Management. And of course, this past weekend, we learned that Le Chateau is shutting down for good. It seemed to have struck a nerve in our newsroom. All of us immediately started talking about our favorite clothes from Le Chateau. It was part of my formative years, if you will. And it's, of course, it's just the latest retailer to shutter its doors. What we're seeing now, is it COVID related, or has COVID just driven the last nail in that coffin for some of these companies?
I think it's, you know, if I had to put percentages on it, it's probably 80% COVID related and maybe 20%, evolution of, you know, the internet economy, e-commerce, that kind of thing. But I think it's really, I'm an optimistic and hopeful, I know it doesn't sound like it, right? But I'm an optimistic and hopeful person by definition. And I think most entrepreneurs, if you talk to them, they have to be optimistic, because why would they do something so challenging and difficult if they weren't? I'm optimistic. But in Newfoundland and Labrador, particularly, there are some extremely troubling signs with respect to kind of the fundamental economy around here. And one of those indicators that you can see of a struggling economy is retail closing its doors. And if you don't need to look very far around Newfoundland and Labrador to see retail space, office space, businesses closing now, not reopening. This is, I believe, and I hope that I'm wrong. I sincerely hope that I'm wrong. But I believe this is just the beginning of a very large wave of small business challenges and shutdowns in Newfoundland and Labrador that aren't going to be easily replaced. Unfortunately, you know, tying this back into the broader issue of the wealthiest becoming more and more wealthy while you know, regular people struggle, these small businesses that shut down, let's say your small neighborhood restaurant that shuts down, it never recovers. The owners go into debt to try and survive, and then they can't go any further. They declare bankruptcy and they're gone. They don't start another business. Whereas your Boston Pizzas of the world, they're sitting on enormous cash reserves. Maybe they temporarily close a restaurant. They have enough money to keep paying the lease and the power bill. And once the economy is back up again, they just flick the lights on and they start up their supply chains and boom, they're back in business. But only thing now is there's less competition in that market because all of the local players or a chunk of the local players have died. And now these national and international chains thrive even more. They're jammed. There's people lined up out the door because there's nowhere else to go. And it takes a period of time before any other local players decide to throw their hat over the wall and try and start a business, if at all, because they might say, you know what, I don't want to get into a business that I'm just going to fail because, you know, restaurant X and business Y, they shut down and they were thriving. So it's very difficult to see. And I think, you know, you look at something that seemed as big as Le Chateau, right? And if they're going out of business, like, What chance does a small local retail store have, for example? You know, and why would somebody choose to do that, take that chance in a place like Newfoundland and Labrador? I mean, maybe I could see it in a Toronto or a Halifax or some other, you know, thriving urban center that's got positive demographic growth year over year. But here we're facing, you know, less and less people, less and less, more and more seniors with less and less disposable income. The math starts to look very, very challenging very quickly.
Le Chateau mentioned, that with COVID, there's fewer people going out and partying and this sort of thing. And that, you know, that was your go-to place for a lot of people to dress up and hit the town. But we're not doing that anymore. So, our lives have changed so dramatically in such a short period of time. How do retailers adjust?
So, I mean, what you saw a lot of them do in the early days of the pandemic, it really did accelerate the shift to digital for a lot of players that could do it. You know, not everybody, I mean, a restaurant can shift to a takeout only model. And that's what a lot of them did during the height of the pandemic and the shutdown. But, you know, if you're leasing a 2000 square foot space with, you know, 500 of that as a kitchen and 1500 of it as your bar and your seating area, you can't sell enough food by takeout, especially if you're using some of these drive these delivery services like Skip the Dishes, who are taking 20 or 30% of your bill. You just can't make enough money to pay all that rent. You just can't do it. Operationally, it's impossible for you to get out ahead of it. So you might see some of these places set up what are called ghost kitchens, where it's essentially just a kitchen and they don't have any eat-in. And so their operational costs go down and they're just a takeout only model. I was reading an article about essentially a drive share service in Halifax. It's called Halley Hub. And it's basically a Skip the Dishes impersonator, but it's just in Halifax. And so it's locally owned and it's locally operated and it's meant to benefit the local restaurant. You might see small places, small little services like that pop up to try and compete to take the business away from the larger ones. And so that's good, right? Competition is good and that would help. But it's tough. I fear that it's only going to get worse. You know, if you drive around St. John's, you go, you know, we were on Stavanger Drive Saturday. We went to Spirit Halloween, just to speak to your thing about what Le Chateau was saying. I mean, I've never seen Spirit Halloween have so many costumes. You know what I mean? Like, they were fully stocked with inventory. And then it dawned on me that, well, nobody's going to any Halloween parties. And that's here in Newfoundland and Labrador, where, you know, we've basically got the virus under control. And you could have a gathering of 10 or 20 people responsibly with masks on, but people are still not doing it. So this is replaying itself all across. You look at that entire power center on Stavanger. Costco is closed, Target is closed. That entire stretch of mini malls there where Winners is the only one that's still open. Bombay, Pier 1, all of those are closed. All of these little strip malls are looking more and more empty. And the question I have is who's going to rush to replace them? I mean, the Avalon Mall just did a massive, massive renovation. It's like $100 million plus. And the mall continues to be busy, but the mall is really expensive. Very difficult for a local business to pay rent in the mall. So they keep coming up with less and less options, and maybe they can shift to digital and try and sell their wares online. But if you're a locally focused provider, like say you're a small shoe store or something downtown, you know, how much can you do? How far can you go? It's not an easy situation, and there's no easy answers to them. And this ties back into sort of our dependence on external organizations to Newfoundland and Labrador coming here for their jobs. But then when they shut down and the jobs go away, we don't have any leverage. There's nothing we can do. It's gone. And they haven't left anything here that sustains itself. There's no lasting industry, which is why, you know, industries like the technology industry in Newfoundland and Labrador, who are locally owned, employing local people with profits staying in the local economy. These are like engines of economic growth that have tremendous value to our province that we need to see more and more of. We have to stop putting the focus on industries that just take the money away and start investing on industries that are local, locally owned, locally operated. That has to be a priority for us if we want to dig ourselves out of this. We have to break this cycle of depending on non-renewables, and I would say a business that's from away, like a large American or Canadian company that opens up here, but all of the profits leave here, I don't think that's renewable. I think we should see that as a non-renewable business, because none of the benefit is staying here except for the wages. And as I've said many times today, wages are the absolute bare minimum of benefit to a society. Never mind that the wages are too small, but if that's all that we're getting, that's not very much.
The provincial government is tackling economic recovery now, which is all important. I want to touch on that in our next segment. My guest today on Target St. John's is the CEO of Vigilant Management, Terry Hussey. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
My guest today on Target St. John's is Terry Hussey. He's the CEO of Vigilant Management. And before the break, you were talking about economic recovery, or you were starting to touch on it, and the provincial government now is delving into that with the creation of an economic recovery team. What do you expect to see from that?
Oh my God, I don't know where they. I mean, there's some very smart people on that committee that the premier has appointed, and I don't know, and I I can't even fathom where they can begin, because the problems in our province are so far-reaching and they're so, so deeply built into the fabric of who we are that I don't know what's possible. And then when you factor it into the context of everybody, every government that we elect is looking to get reelected, and you've got at best a three-year window before they're starting to think about reelection, I don't know how hard they're going to be willing to come down on the side of what's necessary. Now, there's two schools of thought here, right? Some people, I'm a nonpartisan, right? So I try to just look for what makes sense. So people on the conservative end will say, government spends too much. We got to lower government spending and lower taxes on businesses. And I would say, okay, first of all, we just need to get businesses to actually pay the taxes they should be paying, number one. We could then possibly eliminate taxes on the smallest businesses, which would be great. But government spending money right now is probably the source of a third of the wages in our province. I mean, it's an enormous percentage of the people in our province work for the government. And if we go shutting that down in the middle of an already pandemic year, what's going to happen to those people? Where are they going to go? They're not going to sit here and drain their life savings just for the privilege of living in Newfoundland and Labrador. They're going to pack up their families and they're going to leave and they're never going to come back. So that's a really risky strategy to go with what they call austerity. So that's not a panacea. You can't just apply that as a solution. So that isn't going to work. And they're going to say, well, we're going to subsidize this industry. We got $300 million for the oil and gas industry. That's not going to fix the problems, right? It's not going to fix the systemic cyclical problems we have in Newfoundland and Labrador, which is we keep chasing these opportunities, these companies that take wealth out of the province but leave nothing but the scraps for us. We haven't been investing in ourselves in a renewable fashion in industries that are built here to stay here. We keep chasing these things that appear great, they sound great in a soundbite, they make a politician look good, and then it ends up amounting to nothing. So, I mean, I don't know if you can remember 20 years ago when the first tech bubble, you know, call centers were all the rage. And the government of the day, I felt like every second week they were announcing a new deal with some call center to open up here and put jobs here. And yeah, we employed a bunch of people in call centers here, but none of that money stayed here. Like, all that money left. Those companies made money from their profits, and none of that stayed here. So we didn't build anything with it, right? We get the money, we pay people wages. They spend it on goods and services in the local economy, but nothing changes. We're just moving the food around on our plate. Whereas if we can invest in industries that are sustaining, we need to turn the boat, so to speak, away from the direction we've been going, which is chasing the same old traditional industries that are yielding less and less each year. I mean, you know the definition of insanity, right? So we need to do something different. The problem is, even if the government, let's say, Premier Fury's government comes out and says, we're going to invest massively in the technology sector in Newfoundland and Labrador. We're going to subsidize businesses who start up in tech. We're going to subsidize training people who want to transition from traditional industries into technology industries, just like the original TAGS program that trained Fisher people to go and become computer experts. And they had their training paid for. That actually funded one of the first tech booms in Newfoundland and Labrador. Let's say they do that. Let's say that we're going to encourage immigrants to come here and give them tax breaks for starting tech companies. And they do all that. It's 5 years before that really yields a benefit, right? You're planting a very, very long seed that politically, I mean, that's really hard because they could announce all this stuff, put all this money in it, and people are still going to be losing jobs. And we're still going to be feeling the effects of COVID. But to do the right thing, which is to try and invest in something that's long term, will require our political leaders to paint a picture, to give us a vision of a recovery that requires us in the short term to kind of batten down the hatches and survive, because on the other end of it, there will be this brighter future. And all that we've gotten for 20 years has been useless platitudes, you know what I mean? And everybody knows it. That's why people are tuning out the political process more and more and becoming more and more apathetic, because it feels like it's less and less about the reality of what we face. And it's more and more about a dream world of person hours of employment and the useless issue of the day to make politician A look better than politician B. And it's just all childishness. And it's exhausting. And people are sitting at their dining room tables thinking, how the hell am I going to pay my mortgage? You know, I've got a kid. who wants to go on a field trip, wants a pair of sneakers, wants a Nintendo Switch, and I love the kid, and I don't know what to do, and I don't know who to ask for help, and I'm feeling depressed, and scratch tickets are the only thing that makes me feel happy for 5 minutes a week. And like, how many people, and I'm using a bit of hyperbole there, but like, how many people in our province are facing that reality? And so there's an argument to be said that we're too far gone in Newfoundland and Labrador, and maybe we are, but I don't quite believe it, because I run a business here. I employ 15 people. I don't intend to give up just yet, and I don't want to move out of here because I love the place. I did engineering here in the university. I did all my work terms in Newfoundland. I didn't even want to take any away, which I recognize probably denied myself good learning, lived experiences, but I just wanted to live here. And there's so many others that have that same, I jokingly call it a sickness, right? Like, if you're from Newfoundland or Labrador, you know, the first time you round the harbor in St. John's to land at the airport, and you come down those stairs at the airport, it's like a religious experience.
It is. You get right emotional.
And we've all got that same sickness. And so the only way to get through this is to kind of come together and say, okay, we're in this together. And I don't care what your stripe is politically. If honestly, all the political stripes aren't going to help us right now. We need them all to come together and be adults and say, okay, what can we do to make things better?
Terry, we only have a few moments left, and I wanted to get to this question because I noticed you had been tweeting to John Rich about it, and you had indicated that Newfoundland and Labrador's economic recovery will take longer than the rest of Canada. We have just over 2 minutes left. Why do you say that?
Yeah, I think it's because we'll be one of the last places to come back because we're so heavily dependent on oil, and I think the global energy, especially the oil and gas sector, I think this is the beginning of the end for them. It may take 20 years, but I really think a lot of them are going to struggle to recover and restart operations post-COVID. I mean, all of the recent Husky merger is an example of that. I hope that he's right, that we'll be quick to come back. I fear we're going to be one of the longest tails to come back because there's no fundamental industry here beyond things that are externally put here. And it's going to take time for homegrown industries to take effect and actually start pushing economic benefit. All of these jobs getting shut down, all of these projects getting paused, that has a disproportionate impact on Newfoundland and Labrador's economy than it would, say, in an Ontario.
And do you think that this all relies on Ottawa, or is that another indicator of just how bad it is here?
It's a little bit of both. I think we desperately need help from Ottawa that I hope the provincial government is working with them on. But then we also need to do things ourselves to try and build our own gardens of industries that can sustain themselves and bring us to, let's say, an actual future that's prosperous and beneficial to all people, not just the wealthiest people in Newfoundland and, you know, the owners of these multinationals from Ottawa or from Canada and America and wherever.
Is the right approach becoming a little more self-sufficient here? I think COVID shone a greater light on the degree to which we rely on a global network. But is the answer being more self-sufficient or expanding those global networks?
I think we have to be more self-sufficient when it comes to growing, especially our best resource. The one resource we've got in Newfoundland and Labrador that's renewable is our people and our talent and our expertise. So let's focus on the knowledge economy. Let's train people to become part of this super force of people who could take part in information technology, and we could sell that, and then we take that and we go global with it. Sell it to everywhere in the world. You look at what they did at Verafin. They've taken a company of what was 10 people. They have like 400 or 500 people now. They're operating all over North America. Huge success story. That's homegrown. That's something that can be replicated, and we need to do it over and over and over again. And the more support we get from the Newfoundland government, the Canadian government to do that, the better it'll be.
Terry Hussey, Vigilant Management, thanks for joining us today. Interesting conversation for sure.
Thanks a lot.
And he's had the last word now on VOCM's On Target. We'll be back tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for that. Thanks for listening.